The Premier League season is over, but we still have the Champions League and the Europa League to come. And Bet365 are offering a wide range of markets, including first, last, or anytime goal scorers. With over 45 million members, it's the world's favourite online betting company. With the Bet365 Bet Builder, you can combine match results, players to score, number of goals, and more to create your own personalised bet. And if you can't watch the games live, with Bet365's Match Live feature, you can follow every moment through live graphics and text. Bet365 is the world's favourite online sport betting company. The app can be downloaded from the Google Play and Apple App Store. Over 18s only. Please gamble responsibly.
Hello and welcome to the TIFO Football Podcast. I'm Joe Devine and I'm joined now by Alex Stewart.
Good morning, Joe.
And Seb Stafford-Blore.
Hi, Joe.
Hello, everyone. Today is another episode of Sensible Transfers, and the three teams that we'll be focusing on in this episode are West Ham, Tottenham Hotspur, and Burnley. Very exciting stuff. And of course, do you know what else is exciting, Seb?
Is it the Athletic, Joe?
It is the Athletic, but specifically because we've expanded our Sensible Transfer series onto the Athletic. So if we're not covering your team with a video, then we have covered them in an article. Alex has collaborated with all of the incredible club journalists covering the Premier League, some of the Championship teams, a couple of the Scottish teams. So if you want to see a Sensible Transfers piece about your team, you can sign up by visiting theathletic.com/TIFO transfers. That's /TIFO transfers for 40% off an annual subscription, which I think is about maybe £3 or less a month, which is very exciting, isn't it? Anyway, we're all here today to enjoy Sensible Transfers. So without further ado, I shall leave you in the cool hands and the warm embrace of Tottenham Hotspur, West Ham, and Burnley Football Club. Okay, let us begin with Spurs, because Michael Clark asks, for a right-back and a centre-back and a backup striker, that's quite a lot of things to ask for, Michael Clark, but we'll try to do our best. Now, I'm going to come to you, Seb, as a Spurs supporter and fan. You've paid much attention to the club this season. Right-back, centre-back, backup striker, which of these do you think is the most important, if any?
Probably the right-back.
Okay, and what is your reasoning for this? Because, I mean, well, I guess what I want to get from you is a sense of how things have changed under Mourinho, because Tottenham for such a long time were a Mauricio Pochettino team. I felt many people had a good grasp of how they played, or at least, you know, even when they weren't managing to do that, how they wanted to play. With Mourinho, things always seem a little bit more confusing, and I'm never sure whether that's because for sort of lack of positive results or because it's sort of unclear tactically what he's attempting to do. What is your impression of that, and why, therefore, are these positions required?
Yeah, it does seem a little bit darker and more nebulous, doesn't it? The case with the fullback is that Tottenham's creative outlet seems to have shrunk. And there's an awful lot of emphasis placed on what a fullback can do from deep, kind of crosses he can provide, the penetration in the final third, the width. Now, Mourinho has actually been an avid supporter of Serge Aurier, who has, you know, fairly decent attacking attributes and you know, does the role to a degree. But as anyone who has watched him defend knows, that's a pretty hair-raising experience. Watching him trying to tackle in his own penalty box takes years off your life.
Can you explain that to me? Because Serge Aurier seems like the least Mourinho player in the Tottenham squad. That it's been a surprise to me to see that. Am I just misunderstanding what Mourinho favours in a player, or is there something else going on?
No, I don't think you're misunderstanding, Joe. I just think it's a marriage of convenience at the moment. It's a, what do I have at fullback? What are my options? And at the moment, they consist of Serge Aurier.
Yeah.
There was a sort of an aborted experiment a couple of years ago to try and make Juan Foyth into a fullback. That didn't really work. Kieran Trippier obviously was sold to Atletico Madrid. Kyle Walker-Peters, who I think would be a really good signing for Southampton. Yeah, he's never quite convinced as a Tottenham fullback. He's never looked quite comfortable enough, or, you know, you could say he's never quite been given an opportunity. Both would probably be fair. And so Mourinho has been left with the player who sort of does what he wants. And the balance that he's created to accommodate Aurier is that when Aurier goes forward, instead of, you know, do you remember the old Tottenham dynamic of Kyle Walker and Danny Rose, the way they used to push on beyond the halfway line and how aggressive they were?
Very much so.
Yeah, so because Aurier is not to be trusted as a defender, what seems to happen is he's given license to go forward and to operate beyond the halfway line, whereas whoever plays fullback, typically Ben Davis when he's available, kind of becomes a third centre-half. And so it's quite a lopsided formation, and as a result, everything goes through the right side.
And what's happening further up the pitch in those positions then, in terms of the left and right wide wing areas? Who do you see that reflected in the players that are playing inside, i.e. is the person on the right more likely to cut in? Is the person on the left more likely to go around the outside?
Yeah, I think that's a trend in modern football generally, Joe. I think this is the age of the inverted winger. And at Spurs, obviously on the left, Mourinho has preferred Son Heung-min when available. On the right, he's quite like Lucas Moura, but in both instances, their tendency is to drift in field. Moura in particular is someone who is never going to hug a touchline. He's never going to provide the kind of pitch stretching width that you need from fullbacks now. And so as a result, Tottenham can be very, very narrow. And so the importance of having someone that can cover the yards, that can provide the attacking production, but also more importantly, tackle, because it becomes a bit of a zero sum game, doesn't it? If you've got an attacking fullback who is very, very prone to defensive lapses, you're almost better playing with 10 men at times.
Right.
It's difficult, but it's a priority, and I don't think you'd find a single Tottenham fan who's watched the team over the last couple of years who would disagree with that.
I bet you will, because this is YouTube.
Well, this is the internet, isn't it? And so, yes, I'm sure someone will tell me. Although, to be honest, when people disagree with you on the internet, they tend to be very courteous and polite and just say, oh, you know, wow, this is just a difference of opinion. But
that's absolutely true. A bit like when people thought that we should have spent more time talking about Manchester City's centre-back options. Alex, will you concur with what Seb's saying about the right-back position for Tottenham?
Yeah, completely. I mean, I think that this has been part of, like Seb says, you know, the age of the inverted wingers, which sounds rather more kind of Game of Thrones than perhaps it ought to. But, you know, creativity, particularly wide creativity, is expected to come from fullbacks now. And even, you know, where previously teams maybe had three defenders and so width was provided by wingbacks because it wasn't coming from anywhere else. Now, even when teams are playing with wide forwards, those wide forwards are expected to cut inside, and a fullback is really responsible for the entire flank for most teams. You tend to see a little bit less of that where teams are still in an orthodox 4-4-2, but that's usually because an orthodox 4-4-2 is predicated on defensive structure, and so the fullbacks are expected to sit deep and play longer balls forwards into the channels. But yeah, basically it's, you know, there's just a great degree of unbalance. And sometimes that unbalance can work, because if you have a fullback who can come in to be a third centre-back, there is obviously a knock-on effect further up the pitch. You don't have to have a midfielder dropping in to collect the ball so often, particularly if you've got a couple or at least one centre-back who can play those long forward passes. So it's not an entirely bad thing, but what it does mean is that you generally can have an expectation that Spurs will try and attack in a certain sort of way, and if you can stop that happening, then they seem to have slightly fewer options.
Yeah, okay. Well, I'll come to you first, Seb, then. Sticking with the right back, who are your preferred options?
I found one, and he's someone I like because he can play right back and centre back, which makes him feel a little bit more Mourinho-esque to me.
Is it Branislav Ivanovic?
It is not. It is not. It might have been 10 years ago, but it's
great
not the
player.
Moment. Very good player. Very good player. But I've gone with Mainz's Jerry Saint-Just. He used to play for Feyenoord. Really interesting player in that he reminds me a little bit of Eric Dier in the way, because he is fundamentally a centre half, but when he plays as a fullback, he is very aggressive and good footballer, as you'd expect from someone that's come through Feyenoord. And yeah, I like him. There is a case for saying that if Tottenham really want to upgrade the position, there are better options available in Europe, and I completely agree with that. But the reality is that Spurs are just not going to be spending £20-30 million on a player in that position this summer. So these are sensible transfers, Joe. So yeah, we must be sensible.
But, okay, yeah. Well, speaking of sensible, you've made the Eric Dier comparison there. One more thing I'd like to know about this player. Would he clamber over plastic chairs in order to verbally defend his family?
I would hope so. I would hope so.
Because yeah. That's the real Eric Dier test, I'd say.
That's the kind of player I want, and that's probably the kind of player Mourinho wants.
Love that moment. Love it.
Absolutely.
I don't even care what he was there to do. I just love that he did it. And you know what? I'd take the ban if it was me. Great TV. Really great TV. Anyway, Alex, right back, please, for Tottenham.
How do I follow that? I've got two options. Unlike Seb, I've gone for somebody who would be considered an orthodox right back or right wing back. But I agree entirely on cost. So Kenny Tete at Lyon, who's somebody who I've liked quite a lot for a while and has cropped up in a previous Sensible Transfers video. I can't remember for whom, quite possibly for Tottenham, because this is a problem that they've been seeking to solve for a while. He's defensively pretty solid, but he does get forwards. He's not, I think, you know, Lyon are the sort of club who will take offers for him because he's not necessarily, regularly playing for them. More interesting, though, I think, is a guy called Joan Sastre Vanel. We're back at this again, aren't we? Nobody help him. No, he's at Mallorca and he's played really well in La Liga. He's completed one cross accurately per 90. That doesn't sound like a lot, but when you consider that the only two players who've played more than five games in La Liga to have done more than that are Pervis Estupian and Jesus Navas, then it gives you an idea of where he fits into that. Good progressive passer, nice and quick. He's probably not defensively awesome, but he does give that go forward with a little bit more solidity, and he's only 23. He's one that they could work on for a while.
Okay, that's exciting. Do you know this sort of reminded me of watching the I watched the Manchester United Copenhagen game the other day in the Europa League quarterfinals, I think, and United sort of struggled to create throughout the game, obviously hitting the post quite a lot. But one thing that kept coming up with the commentators, and I think has come up more recently in conversation generally, but in this game it really felt like it shone through, was that Manchester United's fullbacks, and Wan-Bissaka is the sort of emblem of this, is exceptionally, you know, capable defensively and has struggled, going forwards and creating. And I think you really do see when, particularly when you're playing against a low block, or when you're trying to break down a team who are sort of dogged and feisty and defensive, that having a fullback who can attack effectively is just so important. I don't know if I mean, I guess, are we saying with Sergio Aurier that Tottenham almost have the kind of total inverse problem, Seb?
Yeah, I'd say so. I would say that, that's actually quite a good comparison. Aaron Wan-Bissaka is really Sergio Aurier's binary twin. Although I would, I'd be fair to Wan-Bissaka. I think he's really improved offensively over the last sort of 6 months or so. He's had some really good moments. But yeah,
no, sure.
It's pretty much the opposite problem. And actually, Joe, I mean, on what you're saying, I completely agree. But also Leicester are really a good example of this in the sense of what happens to a team when you take their fullbacks away. It's like, they're like rooks on a chess piece, aren't they? Castles. What a rook's a horse.
Rook is the castle.
No, rook is the castle. A knight is a horse.
Well, I'm literally just looking at their chess set right now. I've got kind of, you know, insecurity about my chess knowledge. That's a weird place for this podcast to go, isn't it?
Yeah.
The ones on the end, the ones that go up and down.
I tell you, I don't know if either of you watched that game, but one other thing, it's been my favourite football game to watch in a long time, purely on the basis of clearly personal battle between Anthony Martial and I think his name was Johnson, the Copenhagen goalkeeper.
Oh yeah.
Even after United went 1-0 up, and you know there was seemingly no way back for Copenhagen in the game, he still pulled out just world class save after world class save, and every time I thought this man is on a personal mission right here. There's no I don't know if Adonis can do some beeping for me, but there's no fucking way it's going to let Anthony Martial score. And there was no fucking way Anthony Martial was not going to score. It's exactly what I want to see in football. And I felt, you know, for those two players, it was no longer about the scoreline. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't about the bigger picture. It was just about a one-on-one battle, mano e mano. I loved it. I felt it was a real sight to behold. And I hope that that man goes home. You know, Johnson went home that evening and was very proud of himself because crikey, he frustrated some people. Anyway, we've got quite a lot more to cover ground-wise with Tottenham Hotspur, so let's speed along here. Centre-back, are we feeling as important about a centre-back as we are about right-back, Seb?
Not quite to the same degree. It's not essential, but it is important because...
Who's left? Is Jan Vertonghen left?
He's left on a free transfer, and as we speak, he's having a medical at Benfica. So he's well and truly gone. He'll
lovely
do well
spot
at Benfica as well. Yeah, so... But because it's Vertonghen that's gone, I've tried to bring in another left-footed centre-half, another centre-half who can play a bit, who can bring the ball out. So I've gone to Feyenoord again, although I essentially just left Feyenoord. But I've gone back to Holland and I'm taking Marcus Senesi from Feyenoord. Bit of a wild card. I love an Argentinian defender just because of, you know, at some point he'll... You know, he's got a little bit of malice in him, which is always nice. Quite a rugged player, but a skillful one too. Eredivisie players are always a bit of a lottery when they come over to England. But again, we're trying to work within a budget. We're not looking at sort of 45, 50 million pound players. We're looking at projects essentially. And I think he looks a little bit like a Mourinho player, but with the added bonus of being a sort of a Vertonghen light. Someone who is comfortable with the ball at his feet. And also, you know, you've got to replace that left-footed dynamic. You want a right-footed, left-footer, centre-back combination, in a two especially. In he comes.
Alex, why is it so important to have a left foot and a right foot in your central defence?
I don't know that it's that important in the sense that it can work perfectly well with a right-footer at left centre-back. I think the difference is that it just adds... the ability to play out from the back from both sides to across both sides of the pitch, if that makes sense. Because if you're Virgil van Dijk and you're a right footer playing as a left-sided centre-back, Virgil van Dijk's amazing, but his body angle needs to be a certain kind of way for him to be able to hit across the ball towards the right wing where Trent Alexander-Arnold is bombing forwards. And obviously that means if you can turn him towards the other side of the pitch with pressing, it makes it harder for him to do that. And if you're a left footer on that side, then you have the option to be able to play more comfortably forwards to an advancing left wing back, for example. I think it's one of those things that's nice to have, but it's not massively essential. Interestingly, I have also gone for an Argentine defender, a guy called Hector Martinez, who's at River Plate. He's kind of for the same sorts of reasons as Seb says. I think Argentine defenders, sometimes they're like a Lisandro Martinez who's at Ajax, who's very elegant and probably more of a defensive midfielder. And sometimes they've got just that kind of gnarliness. They're a bit unpleasant and there's a ruggedness there, which I think Spurs benefit from that further back. Martinez has got all of that. My slight concern around him is that he's only 6 foot tall, which isn't ideal. You know, if you're a top level centre back, you probably want an inch or two more in height. But he looks to be, you know, a very, very complete defensive player. He's very interesting.
Before we get to backup striker, I would like to give a quick shout out to Reese D14, Adeola Tayo and Luis Humberto, who also asked for these positions when we put out the request for sensible transfer suggestions and questions. So backup striker then, Seb, let's come back to you. Presumably this is somebody who isn't going to eclipse Harry Kane in the team. And this is, I would imagine, a sort of ongoing issue for Tottenham and indeed for clubs who have such a dominant player in one position. If you're trying to bring in a player to sit behind them, I'd be curious. I'm hoping in over the next few months we'll speak to some people who might be able to actually answer this question on the podcast about how you would approach a transfer like that. But what do you think, Seb? Presumably, it complicates things a little bit asking someone to come in who will knowingly be playing second fiddle to the Kane main.
Yeah, big time. The other thing is that also Harry Kane's contract at Tottenham is really incentive based, hence why he never comes off the pitch and why he starts whenever he's available. Just because this is a legacy of the old wage structure whereby, you know, it was very difficult to go over a certain basic wage. So you got to find someone that's happy to be second fiddle. You got to be happy. You got to find someone that's happy, probably with a very bit pot role. So I've dug out an old friend of the podcast, Salomon Rondon, is playing in the Chinese Super League at Dalian, but playing well. Started the season really nicely, 4 goals in 4 games, averaging 3.5 shots per game. Rondon is still just 30 years old, and I accept that there's a little bit of a deterioration when players leave Europe and move to a league like China, but you're not asking him to be anything that he would not naturally be, if that makes sense. He is a hugely physical player, really nice pivot. It will always surprise me that a bigger team didn't take a run at Rondon at some point, just as a kind of to play the role that Fernando Llorente played for Spurs a few years ago. He's ideal, and he remains one of the great underappreciated assets in world football, I think.
He is great, isn't he? I know Alex loves him as well.
We all love Salomon Rondon.
I do love Salomon Rondon, and I think that's a really nice shout. I also just had a moment of pining for Llorente, who was just so handsome.
Yeah, he is.
I've gone for two alternative options.
Was it the hair?
Do you know what? I think
it's probably the eyes.
It was the eyes. I described
him once.
I think
his face was a little...
No, he looked like a sad perfume model. There was kind of like... he had that, you know, he was looking off into the distance. He was always a bit disappointed, but there was something about his
bone
structure.
Yeah, he never saw the ball coming.
No. I've gone for two different options because I think a backup to Harry Kane is increasingly not a backup to Harry Kane because you just can't trust those injuries. And he, you know, he's a great player, obviously, but I think the idea of relying on him and only looking for somebody to play second fiddle is going to be increasingly untenable because I think those injuries could mount up. Habib Diallo, who's at Metz, is actually somebody who, when I googled him quickly to check his goals and assists, which is 12 and 3 last season, he's being linked with Spurs, so that's an interesting one. My preference, however, would be Kasper Dolberg. Dolberg, who was at Ajax, was supposed to be one of the next big things, slightly went off the boil, and like a few other players actually has re-established himself at Nice, scored 11, 3 assists last season for a very capable Nice side, still only 22, and offers the option to play out wide as well.
He's a big heft, isn't he? He's a big, you know, I like to call him Dr. Big Smack It In.
Okay.
Catchy.
Sure. I mean, that's the kind of thing that will definitely be on scouting reports.
Yeah.
Alongside his XG, Dr. Big Smack It In.
Yeah, Dr. Big Smack It In. Sure. No, I think he's great. You know, who was he playing for not that long ago?
Ajax,
yeah. I've watched him. It was in the Champions League last year with Ajax, or was it the year before?
You're thinking of the Europa League run.
The Europa League, right.
He had
that great
game against Lyon.
He had a few great games in a row.
Yeah, he did.
He just looked threatening every time he got the ball. Like, his physicality just caused problems every time the ball went near him. And I don't know much about Kasper Dolberg, but I remember thinking at the time whether a player is particularly technically capable or particularly fast or whatever. If when the ball goes near them, people are a bit afraid and there's a presence, there's a thing that happens, there's a little bit of chaos created. That's a real asset.
I think sometimes what happens as well, and I agree with all of that, and I also agree with Seb's point that physicality is an important thing to have in a Harry Kane backup. When you get players like Kasper Dolberg or Martin Odegaard who kind of burst onto the scene and everybody's talking about how amazing they are slash are going to be, but they find themselves in teams that actually, for very sensible reasons, don't want to play them regularly, it can seem like they go off the boil. But actually, if they're given an opportunity, albeit perhaps at a lesser team, although actually Nice arguably is a step up from Ajax in some ways because of the relative competitiveness of those leagues, they're still very, very good players. Just because they don't immediately transcend into the first team of a club that goes off and wins the Champions League, you know, it's not like they suddenly become bad. There's still a very, very good potential player there.
Yeah.
I think he'd be a nice kind of versatile fit for Spurs.
Oh, I like it. That's some lovely picks for backup strikers. I got all excited. That's Tottenham Hotspur done. And when we come back, we will be talking about West Ham United.
Hi there, I'm David Ornstein, and I've launched a brand new show on YouTube, Ask Ornstein, where I answer questions from our Athletic subscribers. To get your question answered, simply leave a comment at the bottom of my column every Monday, and I'll choose my favourites. To watch the show, head over to the TIFO Podcast YouTube channel, and a new episode will be up every Tuesday afternoon.
Dino Giza was apparently the only person to write in, according to Seb. I think you've got confused with how it worked, Seb, but I'll give you the benefit of the doubt, even though I've just taken that away. Dino Giza, one of the best names to have ever written in. Dino Giza, I'll say, well, or maybe Dino Giza, who knows? Dino Giza, I like the idea of a Dino Giza, you know, a pterodactyl maybe, but he's a bit of a wheeler dealer. He can't fly anymore.
Street paleontologist.
Exactly, right, like, yeah.
Somebody kind of bustles into a dig and starts pushing people around.
Yeah, he drives around in a three-wheel car, and he says, "Oh, give me your cockles." That's a Dino Giza.
Has like sort of model stegosauruses on his dashboard.
That's the one, exactly. I think you're coming up with a fantastic concept here, gang. But this is not what we're here to do. Thanks for writing in, Dino Giza. You, however, have unfortunately asked for a position that Seb absolutely refused to answer, which was for left wing for West Ham.
That's
I'll read
not
Seb's
how I put
notes
it.
Here. No, hold on. I'll read Seb's notes here. They definitely don't need another wide attacker. Yarmolenko, Bowen, Anderson, Lanzini, Fornals, Dianga, etc. He is, but this person is our only West Ham commenter.
So Dennis, like I've been thrown well and truly under the one.
You know the rules now, Seb. Don't write anything to me that you don't want me to say out loud. But anyway, what we have done instead is we've taken your thoughts into account, Dino Giza. We've completely ignored them. And now we are deciding instead to discuss a centre forward, a centre back, and an eight. That's a centre forward, a centre back, and an eight. So tell you what, Seb, since they're your positions, you tell me where you'd like to start.
I'll start a centre back, please, Joe.
Okay, go ahead. Take it away.
Yeah, so the basis for this is Angelo Ogbonna is now 32 years old. I really like Issa Diop, but I'm looking for a long-term partner for him. I've got two younger players. First is Schalke's Ozan Kabak. I mean, who wouldn't want to leave Schalke at the moment? So presumably that would be a fairly easy transfer. Unlike Spurs, I'm not really looking at footballers here. I'm looking at defenders first. I want someone with sort of, you know, good one-on-one tackling, good in the air, physical. I want a sort of a more secure base. And also, I'm trying to find players who I think will suit David Moyes a little bit more. And the other one, bit more of a formulaic pick, but ever since Adam Webster's emergence at Brighton, Shane Duffy has kind of fallen out of favour. Remains a really serviceable centre-half, really stable player. West Ham could do a lot worse. Because I think that's the... That's project one. Project A for them is to just become a bit more consistent at the bottom, at the back of the pitch. Just because everything else, tonally, that's just so important. Got to sort of stop letting in goals. And I chucked Harold Macoudi in there as well. Bit more of a footballer, but I was seduced by the idea of pairing two young French players together for the long term. Feels like it could have... developed with some nice chemistry, and he's a good player, and he's someone also that you could place behind a Duffy or a Kabak, allow to appreciate and grow and develop, and have a very capable but also a very valuable player in the future. So put him in there too.
Okay, I like it. Alex, tell me a little bit about David Moyes and how he likes to play with West Ham, and then tell me who you'd take as a centre-back on that basis.
I think Moyes is... You know, it's a fairly direct style. They seem to be oscillating between a 4-1-4-1 and a 4-2-3-1, which has more relevance, I think, for our central midfield question. But yeah, I agree with Seb. You know, there is attacking talent further up the pitch. Moyes, since he came in, I think really has been sort of trying to sort out the fundamentals at that team. Get them defending better, get them transitioning the ball more directly. It's not necessarily that there's a clear kind of Moyes way of playing at this point in time, but I think that's because in part, he's come into a squad that has been assembled in a very, very piecemeal fashion, without any necessary kind of clear sense of style, clear sense of direction in terms of how the team should be playing. So he's got quite a lot to sort out before he works out what the best way of doing stuff with those players is. And I think for that reason, yes, defensive solidity is really important. I do think having a player who can play out from the back is quite important as well, particularly given that they're likely to lose Declan Rice, who is the kind of link man for that. So I've gone for Brentford's Pontus Janssen. He obviously did very well for Leeds. He's moved to a team that also excelled in the Championship. Slightly less progressive expectations of him around his passing there. But he's a good physical defender. He's a character. He's, you know, well acquainted with English football, having been over here for quite a while. God knows what was happening there. And I think he's, you know, he's, again, he's got a bit of unpleasantness to him, which I don't think is a bad thing in a centre-back. And he would bring a little bit more in terms of passing than their current options.
You mentioned there that the two different sort of formations maybe make the question of the eight more interesting. Let's start with that then. And what do you mean by that, Alex?
So what I mean by that is that Thomas Souchek, who's come in and was acquired, I think, initially on loan by Moyes from Czechia and then converted into a permanent signing, has been a really, really good signing. Like, he's very, great. Very astute. Yeah. And I think, you know, let's not forget that David Moyes is actually very good in the transfer market a lot of the time.
I thought you were just going to say, let's not forget David Moyes is actually good. He's actually very good.
he's all right. Yeah, I mean, you know, David Moyes is actually the sort of manager that you want at a club like West Ham that has sort of vacillated a while. Someone who can come in, who has enough oversight and experience with transfers to be able to put his stamp on a team. He assembled a really good squad at Everton over a period of time. And Souchek is a good example of that sort of signing. So depending on whether or not they want to kind of play with a single screening midfielder with Souchek deep, or whether they want to play with effectively two eights in the sort of 4-1-4-1, which could look like a 4-3-3, that slightly then determines what that other midfielder is going to be doing. You could have someone like Mark Noble or Fournais in the hole. So I've gone for quite an all-rounded midfielder on the basis that they probably don't yet know which of those two things they want to be doing most of.
Yeah.
And
Roy Keane.
Roy Keane and Patrick Vieira. Yes, absolutely. Together at last. Sasha Zadidjar. Who's at Partizan Belgrade, who's a player who I think is genuinely one of the best central midfielders outside of Europe's top five leagues. There isn't anything that he can't do, and I think this is part of the point. He's got the versatility to play as a defensive midfielder, dropping deep and taking the ball from the centre-backs and playing it long. He also gets forwards. At Partizan, he's been playing more as a DM recently, but last season he was much more of a progressive eight. And his stats have obviously altered with his role, but he is consistently really good at whatever he does. He had a good run in the Champions League a few seasons back when he was at Olympiakos, but he's just a fantastic all-round player. And he's the sort of person who could slot in at West Ham and do basically whatever's asked of him.
Mm. Okay, Seb, how do you follow that?
I'm not sure that Declan Rice will leave this summer. I think he'd want to. And I think his favourite destination would be Chelsea. Whether they've got the money to match West Ham's asking price now, given what
they're just waiting to see whether Kai Havertz is a thing.
Yeah, I think so. And I also think they've got sort of priorities further back. I think they need a centre half. I think they need a fullback too. I don't know. Maybe they'll get around to Rice next summer. I'm not sure. Or in January, possibly.
They do see Rice as that centre half, which I think is really odd.
I mean, but if they do, I think that's a mistake. I think
I completely agree with you. But everything that I've read indicates that that's the way they're thinking about it, which makes
sorry.
Zero
slow down.
Sense
explain
to
that
me.
To me again. They see Declan Rice as a centre back.
Yeah.
The central midfielder Declan Rice.
Correct.
Well, he did start at West Ham as a centre back.
Did he really? This is news to me.
And he kind of migrated forward. But I mean, if news to me as well. I mean, I wonder whether I mean, if you're going to spend,
let's say, how instance, I know this?
Tell me
how I know this, Joe.
Is it an athletic subscription?
Yes.
Yeah. Hey, that might be our neatest segue ever on the pod. That was very, very nice.
In that case, I ruined it by singing.
If I may be allowed to say this as well, I've got a piece that was published today on Ben White, who is probably the best centre-back in England outside of the Premier League. Well, I mean, technically outside of the Premier League, who is also potentially a Chelsea target. So a little tactical profile on Ben White for you on The Athletic there.
Theathletic.com/TIFO transfers.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
That would make sense, though, because if you were going to spend the kind of money you need for Rice, I want the assurance of knowing that I'm getting the specialist, not a kind of a caught between two positions type. I think Rice is a 7 out of 10 defensive midfielder at the moment, possibly becoming a kind of an 8.5 out of 10 in the future. As a centre-back, maybe he becomes, you know, a generational player in that position. But goodness, that's a risk to take, given the fee that it would cost to take him. Anyway.
I don't think he does. And I don't think he's a generational player as a generational player as a defensive midfielder either. If you watch his games for England, for example, it's quite instructive how often his lack of judgment and his lack of awareness gets England into trouble. He just seems to not quite be astute enough to work in that position. I'm sure West Ham fans will be furious to hear that, but
I wonder what Dino Giza thinks.
Dino Giza might say that, like, I think England have got sort of a few issues behind the midfield as well, between those two centre backs. I mean, they've dealt obviously with the drop off in John Stones' form, but also, you know, the kind of the haphazard performances of Michael Keane as well. So that's kind of a difficult area for England. I do agree with Alex.
Not now that Ben White is there
on our horizon as a national team player. Can I get to my midfield picks? So the reason Declan Rice came up is because I was planning a midfield which consists of him, Thomas Suchek, and the position I'm replacing is actually Mark Nobles.
How dare you?
He's 33 years old.
You're replacing? And you can't replace the poet laureate of West Ham, the legend that is. Come on. Mark Nobles there as long as he wants it. He'll be there until he's 50.
It's a weak point, and it's sometimes when there's an emotional connection between a club and a player, they have trouble recognizing what's in front of their face, and that is in this instance.
But you're just misunderstanding football then, because the whole point is the emotional connection between the players and the fans. Who cares if they can't see the? I'm with Dino Giza on this one. How dare you?
We don't know that Dino Giza has a poster of Mark Noble on his bedroom
wall. We absolutely do.
Or a tattoo on his back. We don't know that at all. We're making assumptions.
Right, I've drawn my line in the sand. Please step over.
Oh, will
now.
You fuck off and let me have my midfield picks?
Yes, sir.
Right, to save time, Abdoulaye Doucouré, Timu Bakayoko, John Lundstrom. Lundstrom because he's got a year left of his contract, which is just automatically extended. There was a clause in there. Excellent season at Sheffield United. Tailed off a little bit, but really good player. Bakayoko, a risk, but one that Chelsea want off their wage bill without question. There's a deal to be done. And Doucouré because I think you could do all kinds of interesting things in that West Ham midfield with him. Perhaps not as a kind of... Don't use him in the sort of as attacking a way as Javi Gracia generally did, but allow him to work from that stable base of Rice and Suchek. I think that's a really interesting, nicely balanced midfield.
Yeah, a stable base of Rice. Lovely, lovely stuff. Okay, we haven't got very long because, you know, I've interrupted you most of the time, but we've got centre forward left to go for West Ham. Just a quick, can you first explain to me what's happening with Alaa? Is he? I mean, I haven't read anything about West Ham, so I need someone to tell me what's happening.
Seemingly the word on Alaa is a good player, great technical player, a bit light, a bit sort of... Not that comfortable with being physical and using his size. There is a player in there. I think if West Ham were to persist with him, they would eventually get some value out of that transfer. Whether that's what the player wants, I don't know. I'm not sure whether there's any momentum for him to leave. No idea at all.
But in this case, what are we looking for? Are we looking for a replacement or are we looking for some assistance?
I'm looking for someone that will be physical because I like the idea of some of that attacking talent in attacking midfield and out wide. I want them to be able to kind of satellite around something a little bit more consistent. Also, I love Mikel Antonio, but I don't want him to be used purely as a pivot. I don't want him running endlessly into the channel, pressing, because I think he's of more value on the football. I sound like Tim Sherwood. On the ball. So
I think there's a player in there.
Is that a Sherwoodism?
I'm doing an impression of what you said.
You're doing an impression of my accidental Sherwood impression.
Yeah.
That's quite meta, Joe. It's like an episode of Black Mirror. I've gone for Wolfsburg's Wout Weghorst, who anyone who watched him during the Bundesliga restart, how can you not love him? He's like a character from the Trojan War. He lacks a little bit of pace, but I love that kind of footballer. I love the sort of the old-fashioned target man. And he would suit David Moyes. David Moyes has had really good success with that type of player, used in different types of the pitch. But he knows how to use that, for instance, in set-piece situations. He knows how to build an attack around those attributes. So I think that'd be really interesting.
Okay, I like that pick. Alex, what you got for me?
I think Haller should play alongside a second centre-forward, probably. That's maybe why it's not worked out. I think West Ham have got, in him and Alban Ajeti, two really, really good strikers that just haven't been used properly. And maybe the answer is to sort that out rather than buy someone new. However, Ilya Shurikin, who's at Cheska Moscow, who scored 10 non-penalty goals this season in just under 1,400 minutes, high shot volume, 6'2", built like a brick outhouse, doesn't score many headed goals, but is good at contesting stuff in the air and relatively inexpensive for some reason. I'm not sure why. Belarusian international. So he's only 20 as well. So that's potentially one for the future.
Well, we'll be back shortly to discuss Burnley. Dun, 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 dun. It's Burnley. Josh the Sea asks for younger and hopefully more exciting players than the current starters and rotational players, i.e. Bardsley, Peters and Lennon, guys that would make Burnley more interesting to watch for the neutrals. That's broad, but thanks for asking it, Josh the Sea. Okay, let's fit them into the positions that we're looking at, which, according to Seb, are right back and right middle. Explain yourself.
Well, this has its roots in the contract snafu we discussed with Andy Jones on the podcast a few weeks ago. So Phil Bardsley left the club on a free transfer. He was in his mid-30s, that was always on the cards. But Jeff Hendrick also went, and that leaves a bit of a hole on the right of midfield. In addition to which, I don't think this was kind of quite as contentious, but Aaron Lennon also left the club. So they are now really, really short of right footers on that side. We definitely need to do some work on that flank.
All right, well, let's start with Alex then. And on the flank, right middle, please, or right wing, if you'd prefer.
I mean, I can do both, if you'd like. How about that?
That would be lovely.
Yeah. Great. So two right midfielders, Nicholas Eliasson at Bristol City, who scored three, got... Seriously?
Yeah.
Sorry, dude.
No. I feel reassured by that. That's good.
You'll have different reasons. That's fine.
Three goals, 12 assists. He can play on either flank. He's able to cut inside. He's a good carrier of the ball. I think Burnley are looking increasingly to be a little bit more dynamic down the flanks, particularly because Dwight McNeil is now taking on a lot of that creative responsibility. They want to be able to share that. They would have done it with Gudmundsson, but he's been injured for most of the season. But it's quite clear what Sean Dyche is trying to do there, and I think Eliasson would add to that. A cheaper, more of a prospect option possibly is John Dager Torsteinsson of AGF in Denmark. So far, they've restarted their season. He's 9 appearances. He's scored 3 goals, got 2 assists. Again, left-footed. He's also a big player, physically capable. Not massively rapid, but he's quick enough in acceleration. He presses well, and is kind of a Gudmundsson clone, actually, in that way. The other one I've gone for as a right-back, but who gives versatility, is Matty Cash from Nottingham Forest. I think he's going to leave Forest probably because he's a bit good for that level. He certainly adds dynamism and, and ball carrying from the right back position, but he can play further up the pitch as well. I think he can also even play as a central midfielder. He's just a versatile, talented player. He's still young. He's got good experience for quite a period of time in the Championship, which I think suits Dyche in terms of the way he likes to see players, you know, sort of prove their mentality before they join Burnley. So, yeah, he would be my shout for that.
Okay, lovely stuff. Seb, over to you.
Yeah, just a couple of things, a couple of additional bits on Eliasson. From what Andy told us on the pod, we think finances are going to be pretty scarce this summer. Eliasson just has 1 year left on his contract, so that would benefit anybody trying to buy him. Also, Burnley and Bristol City have a relationship. They did a deal for Josh Brownhill a couple of months ago. So, you know, there's probably a negotiation to be done there. My fullback is a punt. Fankati Darbo from Coventry City. it would involve a big step up because obviously he's been playing in League One. He came through at Chelsea, spent a few years bouncing around on loan. I think he had some time in the Eredivisie and maybe at Swindon Town, if I'm right in remembering. Technically quite good. Nearly 6 foot tall, physical, but also a nice crosser of the ball. I think he ticks a lot of boxes for Burnley. I do accept it involves a big leap of faith, but Coventry City very rarely get anything wrong recruiting wise, and that's been shown in their promotion and in the way he's played. He's been excellent since probably about October and November.
Actually, can I just add one more right back?
You may. Yeah, indeed.
So San Gallen in Switzerland are a team who I think are really, really interesting. One of their assistant coaches is a guy who used to write for Spielverlagerung, which is the very clever tactics site that birthed René Maric, the Borussia Mönchengladbach assistant coach. And Christopher Itten has just signed for Rangers from there, which is a really astute signing. Their right back, Sylvain Hefti, is an excellent, excellent young Swiss player, definitely capable of stepping up a level. And while he is quite attacking, he's also the sort of player who is happy to sit deep and just be defensively solid, also tucks into midfield very capably as well, and sort of feels like somewhere like Burnley would be the right sort of step for him in the first instance.
Okay, Burnley, you know, have a number of exciting players. Are we worried about Burnley losing anyone? For example, I mean, like the centre-back partnership of Tarkowski and me, obviously we've talked about Dwight McNeil before. I know maybe there's less interest in Jay Rodriguez, but he's had a very good season. So I don't know. Are there expectations that Burnley are going to be sort of forced to sell any of their more important players?
McNeil, probably. I think that will become, you know, I'm reading that he was actually of interest to Juventus, which,
wow,
would be interesting. He's the only one, really. I think kind of the market for that kind of signing is quite soft. I mean, you could probably make a case for, you know, maybe a year ago, someone like Tarkowski and me being worth, you know, 25 million in an inflated marketplace. But I think now, I don't think there are going to be many clubs who are willing to do that kind of deal. That just seems, yeah, a bit sort of, I think there'll be a squeeze on the kind of the transfer market's middle class, if that makes sense.
I think
Burnley should be okay, and they should have some stability. I think it's really important they do sign, because the crux of this issue between Dyche and Garlick, between manager and chairman, is the lack of investment. You know, he's going to have to be placated because Burnley without Sean Dyche is not a situation anyone should be in a hurry to discover. So there needs to be some activity.
I think Nick Pope possibly is the other, yeah, player in
that's
that squad.
Fair. That's probably true. Yes, I agree with that.
Who people, yeah, would be looking at.
What would you say the value of those of Dwight McNeil is? I mean, because I would assume if they did sell him this summer, they would then have money to go out and spend. What do we think that his market value would be?
Fairly, I think he's a terrific player who is getting better really, really quickly. So I think 30, 40 million pounds for someone like that. The only reason people would be surprised by that is because he plays for Burnley. If Dwight McNeil played for Everton, if he played for Southampton, if he played for, yeah, you know, one of those clubs, Leicester, he would be seen in an entirely different light. And it's partly because everyone associates Burnley with this style. Even you know, this section is based on a kind of, let's make Burnley more exciting. Well, there are exciting bits about Burnley, and McNeil is definitely one of them.
Yeah, I think to be fair, Burnley are transitioning to a more exciting style.
I agree.
Because they've got those players. I think Josh Brownhill in central midfield as well as somebody who can do interesting things. Dwight McNeil at Leicester is actually quite an intriguing prospect.
Dwight McNeil at Juventus is a very intriguing prospect. I'd like to
well,
see.
Well, that doesn't make sense to me because Juventus tend to use wing-backs, don't they? So I'm not quite sure where he'd work on the width.
That might be frivolous gossip column nonsense, but it's appeared a couple of times over the last few days.
What, in the transfer season? Never.
Never.
Okay, never. Well, I think that's the end of the podcast, isn't it? Because we've got to that time when we normally finish things. So don't forget that if you want to hear more about your team as it relates to sensible transfers, there is probably, depending on who you support, a very good editorial piece written in this exact format. And you can read those by getting a 40% off an annual subscription. You can do that by visiting theathletic.com/TIFOTransfers. Enjoying yourself in the app with all that it has to offer. For now, it's goodbye from Seb.
Bye-bye.
It's goodbye from Alex.
Goodbye.
It's goodbye from producer Adonis. you won't hear that in the, because I'm sure he'll edit out the pause, but there was a very long pause. He wasn't expecting that. And it's goodbye from me. Thanks for listening. Au revoir.